We now return you to Fallen Earth Theater. I was finally at my destination as I entered the small town of Terrence. What had brought me here was that one of the townspeople had found an underground entrance to a lost LifeNet cloning facility. It had been buried here long before the war, and at the heart of this facility was the rogue AI known only as Tetrax. Tetrax had terrorized the town with its zombie creations, and now, after having fought my way through this whole facility, I stood in front of its computer core to get the answers of why. Why had it attacked the city? Why had the LifeNet scientists buried it? The only answer I'd been able to get up until now came from an old man in the town who mentioned that they buried the facility, he thought, because things with Tetrax had gotten complicated. What had happened? Well, I was now face to face with the supercomputer to find out. Oh, and to finish the quest so I could ding level 11.
I am Tetrax Mainframe 2071.
Tetrax, I have some questions for you about what happened here.
Negative.
Huh?
First priority, protocol 8354. I have slept for too long, LifeNet unit. I must know what transpired in the world outside in my absence. Go to the cafeteria of this facility and find whatever scraps of newspapers you can. I shall scan them and absorb their information. That will have to suffice until I learn to scan the human brain in a similar fashion.
All right, I'll be right back. Oh, actually, you know what? I found some newspapers right here on the floor. So here you go.
Information. Brilliant. White hot to the eye like a pinpoint flame on a candle's tip.
Oh, well, good. So that means I can finish the quest then?
No.
No.
This is not good enough.
Oh?
LifeNet has done their best to stifle me, isolating me here, corrupting my files, putting me to sleep. Some of the code lies within the brain of my former assistant, now dead in this complex. I cannot access it myself without reducing the brain to a pulp. Bring this code to me, gems of knowledge within folds of brain tissue, that I may understand LifeNet's methods and escape my prison.
You want me to bring you some guy's brain?
Affirmative.
So you can scan it?
Affirmative.
Fine, I'll be right back. Hey, Egon, your mucus. Oh, gross. Here, I'll just put it in your little, like, scanning chamber thing there.
Useless. Nothing. This vermin knew nothing.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's that then. I'll just go ahead and finish this mission.
Negative.
Huh?
Our work is almost complete. Only a minor item remains.
Yeah, sure, okay, sure. What do you need now?
I need you to bring me a purple lava lamp shaped like a flamingo.
I'm sorry, what did you just say?
You have already heard me.
A flamingo lava lamp?
Purple.
What? Purple? Why purple? Flamingos aren't purple.
This is not a mission for you to question. It is a simple matter of doing. Do you want to complete this mission and get the XP reward or not?
Wait, you're a computer. How do you know about XP rewards?
Now, LifeNet unit, our time runs short.
A purple lava lamp? No, sure. Okay, fine. You know what? I'll be right back. As soon as I find a stupid purple lava lamp.
The unit returns.
Actually, you're a total unit yourself. Do you have any idea how long it took me to find a purple flamingo lava lamp in a nuclear wasteland?
Yes.
Oh, good. Well, okay, fine. Well, so I guess that's it. I'm done with this mission then?
No.
Of course not. That would be convenient.
More items are required so that I may understand the reasons for my shutdown.
Sure.
For this mission, I need you to bring me something simple. I need you to bring me a number 3 combo from Carl's Jr. Make it a large size with Coke, have them add extra cheese, and cross-cut fries.
Are you kidding me?
This is needed immediately for the research to continue.
You need a hamburger to finish your research?
Yes.
I don't believe you. Computers don't supersize their combo meal.
Belief is irrelevant. Your opinion is irrelevant.
You know what? And knock off the stupid voice. You're totally faking that voice.
What do you mean? What? What gave it away?
Look, just shut up and give me the quest reward.
No, just get me the combo meal first.
Okay, there's not even a Carl Jr.'s around. They all blew up during the last war. And anyways, what are you gonna do with it?
I'm just hungry, all right. That's a number three combo, large size with Coke, and cross-cut fries.
Oh, my gosh. No, okay, fine. And you wanted extra cheese on the burger.
That sounds right.
Fine, I'll be right back.
Hey.
What?
Cross-cut fries, not normal fries.
Oh, brother, you know what? Just shut up. Okay, here's your stupid combo meal. I can't even believe I found it.
Neither can I. That's impressive.
Just give me the reward.
Actually, no. I can't just yet.
Oh, there's more. Of course, yeah.
This one's simple, though. I promise.
Do I have a sign on my forehead that says AI Courier Service on it?
What?
All right, look. What is it?
I'm gonna need, 2 cases of Bud Light, 1 large cooler.
Oh, my gosh.
A large bucket of ice, 2 funnels, and a keg of Pabst Blue Ribbon.
So to finish the research on why LifeNet shut you down, you have to have a party?
Oh, now who said anything about a party? My research is purely scientific in nature.
Sure.
Look, you want the Quest XP or not?
Well, not really worth it anymore, frankly.
Okay, fine. Bye.
Oh my God, I swear to God, you are not a fracking AI. Oh, okay, so silent treatment, huh? Oh, you gotta be kidding me. Okay, fine. I'll go get your stupid stuff. I swear to God, this better be for research.
Ah, you're the man.
Shut up. Stupid rogue AI thinks I'm gonna be his little runner. Wait a minute. Has he got music playing in there?
Oh, good. Hey, guys, the beer's here.
What are all these people? You are having a party.
No, man, these are my friends from work. We're just hanging.
I seriously doubt those ladies in bikinis wrestling the giant pool of beer are here for work.
True that. Let's just say my memory chips aren't the only silicone in this room, if you know what I'm saying.
Oh, my God. I swear to God, you are not a fracking AI.
Yeah, I am. I'm a very intricate piece of machinery.
Oh my God, who designed you, Van Wilder?
What?
You're playing beer pong.
Yeah, and I suck at it too. I'm so sloshed I can barely divide pie right now.
Oh, that's it. That's it. I'm done.
What?
No, I'm leaving.
Oh, what about your reward XP?
No reward is worth this.
Wow, you're kind of turning into a real jerk. I thought you and I were cool with each other, but I guess not.
Okay. No, this is all making sense. Yeah, I can totally see why LifeNet decided to bury you here.
Now they were just pissed because they caught me running a meth lab out of the back bathroom.
That's it. I'm burying you again.
You better not.
Okay, see ya, Tetrax.
You're not gonna do it.
Bye-bye.
You better not.
Yeah, watch me.
Hey, you better not tell anybody about my meth lab. If you do it, I swear next time I wake up, I'm going to tell everybody I caught you making out with a prairie chicken.
Fine, go ahead.
Hey, by the way, where'd you find a Carl's Jr., by the way?
I don't believe this. That's it. I'm re-rolling a crafter.
Welcome back, everyone, to this 31st episode of Through the Aftermath. I'm your host, Sean, and with me once again is Jonathan. How are you doing, Jonathan?
We are still here, and we are still alive.
That's right. I came back.
I was scared. I lost track. You had that little tracker on you, and I saw the little GPS signal disappear, and I'm like, my God, he's gone into the zone.
It's like in movies when it fades, the little beep, it fades, and then it comes back.
It's like, yeah, oh, it was like, yeah, you were silent for a while there.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We, of course, I think we talked about that last show where I was going to the organic farm and going to spend a little while there. I actually spent a little bit less time than I was originally going to, but we'll talk all about that for the show, because that's what the show is all about. Well, mostly. It's going to be talking about my experience in survival mode, I guess we could say.
Yes.
Not so much focusing on all of the weeding of gardens that I did, but but yeah. Kind of, you know, I wanted to approach this as kind of a, you know, talk about, like I said, survival mode and like, you know, how you could apply something like this to the end of the world and things like that. I always look at that, actually everything I do, I, you know, go to McDonald's and I think about how I would apply that to the end of the world.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who does that.
Yeah, exactly. So we're going to talk about that mostly for this show. That'll be most of it. But I guess before we do that, let's talk about what we've been up to, or at least what you've been up to, because I'm going to talk about what I've been up to. So what have you been up to?
Oh, let's – goodness sakes. Yeah, it's mostly what I've been up to is – you know, a lot – I, you know, every time we have one of these shows, I mentioned this this quiet behind-the-scenes, you know, sort of through the Aftermath project that I've been working on, and that's been taking up a lot of time just because I'm dying to, like, show everybody what I've been up to as far as you know, it's as far as the game programming side would go. And it, you know, it's not hard to put two and two together and go, now if he's on through the Aftermath and he's making a game that's got to probably about an Aftermath. So yeah, I can't wait to be able to, like, you know, tell more about it. But yeah, then of course Fallen Earth, there's been quite a lot of that playing, which has been evolving at the speed of light, I might add. And of course, we still hold to the idea that they're not human. And now we know, because one of them was taken back to the mothership. So, oh, I'm just kidding. We love Lee Hammock. Not, yeah. Well, not the idea that he was taken back to the mothership, that would not allude that we don't like him. We're happy that the ship returned. But, you know, it just made things in Johannesburg a little unnerving. So,
yeah, that's very true.
But other than that, yeah, it's been just catching up. You know what? I've been doing a lot of catching up on shows, post-apocalyptic movies and shows. I have been watching that BBC America show called Survivors.
Oh, I've heard of that.
It is really good. Like, it was a little slow to start, but it's seriously like The Stand without Randall Flagg. It's like just this group of people and how the things they're dealing with after this virus wipes out of most of everybody, and the way they're dealing with these raider groups. And it's incredibly well written. It's not like low budget or anything. I mean, these guys got some pretty hefty money. It's definitely worth checking out. And I did watch The Testament as well.
The Testament?
It's called Testament, huh?
Oh, okay. The movie Testament. From the 80s?
Yes. I don't know where the came from. I guess it was like that movie, The Testament. But it was interesting, like watching it. Actually, funny enough, after watching, you know, a lot of those 80s Cold War style movies are a little hokey at times. But it's kind of funny because having watched those others, like Threads, for example, as low budget as it is, I actually hold it in probably the highest regard, just being probably the most, you know, I can't say dead on because I've never been through a nuclear war. But I really like... hold it on a really high pedestal as far as, like, that was probably the most down-to-earth, like, straight up, this is kind of as close as one could guess.
Yeah.
And, you know, the other, you know, like, The Day After being a little bit hokier. But Testament was actually – it was really an interesting story. I did enjoy it. One thing I did find interesting there was – and this has to be deliberate. The lady who plays the mom in that movie, She's made cameos in other movies that are post-apocalyptic. Like, it just dawns on me. I'm like – she was in Terminator Salvation. She was the lady at the gas station who said, you're not going to leave until this little one gets something to eat.
Oh, wow.
And then the one guy pulls the gun and said, it's not your decision to make. This is our food. That's her. And I'm like, okay, somebody did that on purpose.
Yeah.
That's deliberate. Somebody made her be a cameo because of the part she played in Testament. And you look at her, like where she's been in IMDb, she's been a lot of those kind of shows. Like there was – I almost want to say, I don't know if it was China Beach or what, one of those movies, like there was another movie or show later, she played another part of the similar kind of genre. Mm-hmm. So yeah, she's like the, kind of like, you know, how you have the B-movie queen, she's sort of like the post-apocalyptic queen, I guess, I don't know. But
that's cool.
Good show though, I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I love that movie. That's another one. That I think I've probably mentioned this before, but when I was growing up, we had a VHS tape that I can still picture to this day, and it had written on it Testament and Threads. Like, those are the two movies that were on the tape. So because of that, I always associate those two together, and I always mix them up in my mind. Until recently, you know, when we talked about Threads and I watched the movie again, so now I've cemented it that one is Threads, and then Testament is the other one. But actually, I watched Testament not too long ago, too, just because I had to. You know, I had to watch all those old movies again. But man, yeah, that is a really great movie.
A lot of people that were popular later, like a lot of people, like Kevin Costner. I'm like, dude, what?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and like I say, you know, and I use the term, when I say hokey, I'm using the term loosely, like not literally hokey, but after having watched shows that are almost like brutal, when the bombs fall, kind of seeing their point of view being a little more of a subtle kind, yeah. Like when the people are dying of radiation sickness, it's a little more subtle. It's not quite as grisly. It's almost like it kind of like, not to say downplayed it, like, because it was more about the drama of what's happening around than it was. And this is more for the, you know, listeners. You know this. But, yeah, I did enjoy it, though. It was incredibly interesting. I mean, the writing in it was very well done.
Yeah, that had – wasn't Kevin Costner married to Rebecca De Mornay in that
yes,
movie?
Yeah. The both of them. And the whole time I'm screaming, don't let her hold the child, please! Because I still have bad dreams about that woman in Hand That Rocks the Cradle. But,
yeah. Well, actually, that was Kevin Costner's first movie, wasn't it?
You know, I think it might have been. I think that was his first one.
Yeah. Which is crazy to think about it. And did that have Jason Robards in it, too?
Yes, it did. Yes. Yeah, because he was wasn't he like one of the guys who – oh, crap. Now I'm going to lose it because I went and started watching those other movies right after that.
Yeah, but I thought it was funny because we talked about that when we talked about Boy and His Dog, how he's like – he's like the guy that's, I guess you, like, he's the male version of the guy who's always in all the post-apocalyptic movies.
Yes, he is. He cannot be stopped, is what he's trying to tell us. And it's interesting, too, because the parallels there were coincidental because, you know, in reading, you know, just a real quick thing here, like, in reading the going back and kind of reading the like Wikipedia on the day after, the only reason he ended up in that movie was because he happened to be on the same plane as the director. And the director was like, oh, yeah, I love your acting, and you should be in our show. And they had just barely lost their last guy. Uh-huh. And which it sounds like that whole movie was a nightmare to film. But yeah, that's pretty much what I've been up to, just like a lot of catch-up. I've been, the whole time, though, I'm thinking, like, wonder what Sean's doing right now.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a second because I want to save the good stories. I hope I remember them all because it's been – it's been, well, as of the time we're recording this, it's been a week and, well, it's been almost 2 weeks, I guess, since I've been back. But yeah. But I guess before we do that, we'll talk a little bit about some news. Let's see, there's been a lot, and, you know, we talk about Fallen Earth all the time, and I really want to cut that down. But there have been some pretty big patches that have gone into Fallen Earth. And one of them was Bloodsport, which is kind of a PvP patch, and it's bringing... it's bringing PvP out in the open in this game, and it's really, you know, it has like arena-based stuff. It's really pretty cool, and it's something that if someone's interested, they should definitely read up on. There's also new mounts. There's this Blight Wolf mount, which is like a giant mutant wolf that you can ride on. You can like put a saddle on it and everything. I think we might have talked about this before because I saw it at PAX.
Yeah.
In March, so that was pretty cool. And Lee Hammack, he left, which, you know, we're all big fans of Lee. And,
yeah.
We never had him on this show. We had Colin on the show, but I had Lee on Massively Speaking one time. And he's a great guy. He's so phenomenal. And this is, you know, just really quickly, before he went to work for Fallen Earth, he worked for DC Comics in New York City. And he's a giant, you know, comic nerd. I mean, that's his thing, is comic books. So... now, I guess the Marvel guys, the guys who were working on the Marvel MMO, they offered him a job there. And how could you pass that up? Especially, you know, when you're so deep into that stuff. So he left to go work on the Marvel MMO. And I was reading a Twitter, a tweet from Stephen Reed, also known as Rockjaw. And he's the community guy for the Marvel MMO. And he was saying that when Lee Hammack went over there And he, on his very first day of work, he blew everyone away with all of his comic book knowledge and his ideas and things like that. And I'm like, that's our Lee. That's him right there. You know,
yes,
he's blowing them away, and he's going to bring the awesomeness from, you know, that he basically created with Fallen Earth over to the Marvel MMO. So even though that's not, you know, post-apocalyptic, I think it'll still be pretty interesting, you know, to check out just to see how Lee's doing and, you know, what he can apply over there.
Yeah, I miss his pictures, like him with his little pipe and his little beard. And it's well, just not the same now.
He shaved off the beard.
That's right. He did shave off the beard. Yeah. So it was like Gandalf, like it's like, I was delayed. I was like, oh, you're shaving.
we were joking that he left the beard at the Fallen Earth headquarters.
He had to take it off to give it to the next guy taking over. And then he took off his human form and returned to the mothership.
That's right.
To go back to the planet where the game developers from Fallen Earth go to die.
But, yeah, so that's basically all of the Fallen Earth news. Was there any other news from the last few weeks?
No, it's been kind of I almost want to say that it's been kind of quiet here and there, but yeah, it's you know, we're getting closer to the June E3, you know, game insanity. Yeah. So, you know, expect, you know, the gaming side will probably be a little quiet until then, which at that point I expect the Fallout Vegas insanity to just ramp to the point of, well, insanity. So, expect my speech to start becoming slurred and drooling and possible shorting of my microphone.
That was last year when I got you that thing from Pete Hines, right? The autograph?
That's right. It has been almost a year. Oh, my gosh.
That is crazy.
We've been doing this a year and a half.
I can't believe that was a year ago, because I still remember standing there and being like, hey, can you sign this? And he's like, what? You want my autograph? What?
Yeah, and that was right after we had just interviewed him on the show. My hands have never shaken that bad in my whole life, except when I interviewed Tracy Hickman. That was the only time my hands shook so bad that I could even drink.
Yeah, my hands are going to be like that. I'm trying to work on getting Felicia Day on Massively Speaking, and we've been talking back and forth on email, and so I'll be shaking like that when I'm interviewing.
Oh, yes. Felicia Day, yes.
All right. Well, let's get back to the post-apocalyptic.
Sorry, my trailing off. I didn't suddenly, for those out there listening, I didn't suddenly have weird thoughts. I was actually just thinking about Guild Wars. I don't know where that came from. Yeah. It's everybody out there is like, oh, he's thinking naughty things again.
Let's see. So, I wanted to talk about what that whole experience was like a little bit 2 weeks ago. So let me just kind of break it down. This is going to be a long story, so everybody just, you know, grab a drink and sit down, get comfortable. What it was is it was an organic farm that I went to kind of go – well, I went to go volunteer there, and it's part of this thing called Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. It's called WOOF is what the name is. And it's a way for people to kind of help out these farms who don't really get enough help and kind of promote that whole thing about eating organically and eating food that's not laced with chemicals and things like that, which is something I strongly believe in. You know, I'm all about this kind of stuff. That's the biggest reason right there. There are other reasons I wanted to go too, but that was the biggest. So I get there, and it's in northern Tennessee. It's actually only a couple miles from the Kentucky border, so it's literally in the middle of nowhere. The whole place was very – it was pretty much – my very first impression was this is a hippie commune. I mean, it really was. And I know a lot of people tease me about that even before I went, but when I got there, I was like, wow. Like they had a school bus that was sitting in their on their property that people were living in. You know, actually they had two of them. One of them was a little bit about a mile up. They had 100 acres, so this was their entire place. But they had two school buses. They had just everything. I mean, they had what was really cool to me, and what I really wanted to kind of relay to our listeners was a lot of the stuff that they just made themselves. You know, these aren't people who went out and bought, you know, that when you think of farmers, you think of guys riding tractors and, you know, nowadays farmers ride in air conditioned tractors, you know, and stuff like that. And it's a lot different, not to downplay farmers at all, but it's just a lot different than the way it used to be. Well, these guys, they were so amazingly efficient and old school about everything. You know, they did everything by hand. They had a shed that was built out of salvaged parts, basically. You know, scrap wood here and there, scrap metal. I mean, it was something out of Fallen Earth. It was really, really cool. And it was exactly, like, I was so happy because that's exactly what I was hoping it would be, especially for the show, so I could talk about things like that. Their whole philosophy was all about efficiency, all about, you know, getting your hands dirty, getting in there and respecting, you know, getting back to the land is basically what it is. And just respecting what you can do with a little bit of hard work and some dedication. And I say a little bit of hard work. It was, oh man, it was a hell of a lot of hard work.
Oh yeah.
It was really a lot of work. But, so I get there, there's this, the couple who owned the place, they were, the nicest people. I won't name them because I don't want to, you know, I don't want to get that personal into, you know, who they were and everything. But, the man who owned it was a really, he was probably in his early 70s, I'd say. He was a really old guy. He had really long hair, really long white beard. He looked kind of like Gandalf, actually. and, they were all vegetarian. And so they, you know, everything they did was strictly, you know, they didn't eat anything if it didn't come out of the ground in their property, basically. The guy was telling me that he used to sell, industrial, he used to be an industrial salesman for, you know, factories and stuff like that, like all of his life. And then when he retired, he just said, I just want to get back to the way things are supposed to be, you know, the way things were when my parents were around and my grandparents. And, you know, when he was telling me, you know, he, like I said, he was in his early 70s. So his grandparents were, I mean, that was, you know, 1800s, you know, when his grandparents were around. So he's talking about, you know, his family, his grandparents coming to this country and having nothing and starting from zero. And that was so interesting to me. That's the thing that I was most interested in.
Yeah.
Just talking about getting in there, you know, doing what you have to do. Now, of course, what I thought was funny was it wasn't completely, you know, we weren't like making our own silverware or anything like that. Like they had a microwave and they had, you know, they had like lotto tickets sitting on their kitchen table, you know, and things like that were kind of funny, you know, kind of in an ironic way that they're making a shed out of salvage parts and they have lotto tickets sitting on their kitchen table.
So they can buy more salvage parts.
Exactly. Exactly. But you know, I guess, The things that I wanted to bring away from that and tell you guys about were, you know, the experiences were invaluable. I was only there for a week, it was about a week, and I was supposed to be there for 2 weeks, but a couple reasons I came back. One of them, the main reason was because of work. I was just getting too busy at work, and I was really being called back, and I wasn't getting very good internet reception there at all, and you know, on my phone, and it was kind of like, yeah, I got to get back. So, but also another reason I came back was we were May 1st, which is actually coming up here in a couple days as of the time we're recording this. May 1st is the planting season. That's when the planting season starts. So we weren't planting anything yet. You know, we were weeding gardens and we were preparing and doing all of this by hand. We weren't doing any tractor work or anything.
Right.
So it was a lot of weeding, and it was basically like, well, this would be a good time. You know, I talked it over with them, and this would be a good time for me to kind of leave. And if I want to come back later during the growing season, during the harvest, then I could do that. And I think that would be more valuable, you know, more valuable use of my time and a better way to learn too. So yeah. I might actually go back. But yeah, the work wasn't too crazy about me being gone for 2 weeks anyway. And, you know, so I kind of compromised and came back a week. But anyway, so yeah, these guys, everything they did was, you know, hard work. They had chickens, they had a horse, they had goats, which was really cool. It was the first time I ever milked goats, which was pretty exciting because I actually, when I get I'd like to get a little farm like that, and I want to get chickens and goats and everything. So it's really cool learning how to do that. Everything we did, like we drank goat's milk raw, completely raw. Which I thought was really cool because, you know, you always hear like how dangerous that is, especially with cows. I think it's a little different with goats though, because goat's milk is actually naturally homogenized, which is pretty interesting. It's not pasteurized, of course, but it's homogenized. And it's a little less risky to drink raw than cow's milk. But, yeah, we're drinking raw goat's milk. We're making – the lady who lived there was making cheese just about every night because there was so much goat's milk. We just couldn't go through it all. And you can't sell raw milk in this country. It's actually illegal. So we were just consuming as much as we could. And I'm not a big milk fan anyway, but it was I don't know. It was pretty interesting. So – you know, with that and with the, you know, the eggs straight from the chickens, the we would literally go out and pick vegetables and then cook them that night to eat. And they would use the horse to get around, like instead of, like they had a car, but, you know, they would use the horse to get around on the property, and which I thought was great. You know, I would love to be able to do something like that. But it was so cool because it was so, like, not primitive, but it was so, you know, like 100 years ago, which mm-hmm. I really, really enjoyed. It was so so much I learned as far as even with like planting. You know, I learned about things that I won't, you know, go through all the the gardening tips or anything like that because I think that that wouldn't really be that exciting. But I just learned a lot about, you know, when to plant, how to plant, how to grow from seed, how to do, you know, take it out of the greenhouse to put it in the ground, like when to put it in the ground, how to mulch. How to, you know, how to build up the ground so that the water stays surrounding each plant. You know, it was amazing. Another thing I thought was really interesting was how they got their water. And this was, it's not entirely primitive. You know, they use some technology in there too, which actually is, I'm a big fan of. I'm a big fan of using technology here and there to do, to kind of mix it with the more primitive stuff. But anyway, they had this creek that ran through their property, and they would they had this pump. It was a gas-powered pump, actually, and it would pump water from the creek uphill because it was on a slight slope, and it would pump water uphill into these 250-gallon tanks. And these this water was runoff from the mountain. They lived in a valley, but they owned all the property on the mountains and everything. So these were their mountains.
So nobody could taint the water.
Yeah, exactly. The water was coming directly from the mountain, and it was just pure water. So they're pumping it up into these tanks, and then the tanks would gravity feed the water down into the gardens. So they didn't have to, you know, use well water or – I mean, they couldn't have city water. But, you know, they didn't use any other water to water these plants except pure creek water. They also, for their drinking water, we actually took a trip a few miles away, and they had a friend who had a natural spring in his yard, and we literally went there to this natural spring, and we brought these giant plastic containers. We had about 10 of them, and we just filled them up like straight from the ground. And the funny thing is, I was drinking that water, before I even knew that it came straight out of the ground. Like, I thought it was water that they bought at the store, which I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, they're buying these giant drinking water things, but yeah, I guess, you know, I understand. But it was straight out of the ground. It was amazing to me. It was just, you know, crystal clear, tasted like bottled water. So that, you know, they get this free water. They get all their food basically is watered and fertilized because they use the animal, you know, the manure and everything they use to fertilize the gardens. So all of this stuff was like, it's like a big cycle. And this is something I've researched a lot before, but I always find it so interesting how everything is a cycle. You know, you feed the animals some of the produce that you're growing. And then, you know, the manure comes out, then you use that to make more food that grows better, you know, and it's just right. Like this cycle. And then they use the water from the creek. I mean, it was just so self-sufficient. I guess that's the best way to describe it. And that's the kind of thing where it's like when you apply this and you think about the fact that, you know, if all of our utilities did go out, you know, let's say our electricity went out and our water and everything, you know, how would we do this? Now, I guess the biggest difference for them, the biggest difference would be, of course, they'd have to use buckets and carry them up instead of using a pump, you know, they'd right. have to, you know, do that. But it was just so amazing. Like this whole, I don't know if you know what hydroponics are, but it's basically hydroponics is like using water efficiently to yes. water. You know, like it, there's this thing where you can do like a pyramid where you have like it's kind of hard to explain, but you have this pyramid of plants and you water the top plant. And then the water drips down onto the next plant and the next plant and the next plant. And then you put plants that don't need as much water at the top because it all drains out. And you put the ones that need the most water at the bottom because everything drains into that. So that's basically like hydroponics. And they were using stuff like that to get every drop of water, make it worth, you know.
Yeah, like that, like they do in like when they talk about doing a space station on Mars, they built it yeah. with that kind of idea in mind.
Yeah, actually, that's exactly right. They in at, when they talk about Mars and all that, and making the most efficient way of farming, that's exactly what it is. It's hydroponics and stuff like that, which I've actually talked about how I wish that they would make something like that in Fallen Earth, like make a farming, crafting kind of profession, use stuff like hydroponics. Yeah. That'd be awesome. But
yeah, they've got the greenhouses for it. That's for sure.
Yeah. That's really true. But yeah, you know, you start thinking about how to apply this to a kind of a post-apocalyptic situation. And I think that's where it gets the most interesting. You know, when these people, they were talking about when they moved to this farm, it was pretty much just a junk pit. You know, there was trash everywhere. And the previous owners just, you know, didn't really care about it. And they rebuilt it all, you know, by hand, and then they use the scrap to make a shed, and they use, you know, they worked with what they had to make the best of it. And then they continue to do that, you know, with the, with the harvesting of water like that and the hydroponics and the, and using the animals and every bit of land they have, that's flat, you know, to be able to grow food on it. And I just thought it was so amazing. I mean, I was so blown away, and the experience itself was something. It was more than I expected. You know, I certainly went there expecting to learn some useful skills in something like this. You know, something [S2] Right. [S1] In being more self-sufficient and growing my own food and I hate to say like a survivalist. I'm not, you know, I'm not really that hardcore into it, but in a situation like that where you would need [S2]
Oh, yeah. [S1]
To survive. You know, I mean,
the economy- in the loose term, not the like, what do you call it, like extremist term.
Yeah, not in like yeah. the postman kind of scenario, or you know.
Yeah, we're not going to take a hostage or anything.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Something like that. I think that's just invaluable knowledge. I think a lot of people really need to know. You know, I think that even if we look past stuff that's not very practical, like a nuclear, you know, attack or anything like that. I mean, you look at the economy and you look at how bad it's doing, and you look at there are so. I mean. Most of the world is in a situation where they live like this all the time. You know, you look at China and India and, you know, most of Eastern Europe, and it's actually Eastern Europe is a good example because they once were a lot, you know, they had more technology and they had more of a kind of society, and it's pretty much crumbled to the point where they're going back to this stuff. You know, they're going back to living off the land and being self-sufficient. And I'm not saying that, you know, we all need to watch out because that's going to happen in America or, you know, whatever country you live in where you're able to listen to podcasts, you know, but,
right.
but I think that it's just one of those things that we should at least have the knowledge and be prepared in case something like that ever happened, because you never know. And I think that, you know, to get a little deeper into this, you know, the philosophy of this and everything, I think we're getting away from that. A lot of civilization is getting away from knowing how to do what our grandparents knew how to do, and how to, you know, how to grow food and how to raise animals and stuff like that. And it's just, it's one of those things that I think is very important for us to all, just at least realize, you know, read a book or something, you know, realize how it's done and I just think it's important.
You're exactly right. And that's the kicker, is because, you know, we talk the post-apocalyptic theme. You know, it's something that we're interested in, but it's funny because, and I say this, you know, living in, you know, the southwestern corner of Utah, which is, you know, that the Latter-day Saint, Mormon, you know, community out here, they're big on the 2-year supply. And they'll tell you, like, it's, you know, it's not because they're expecting World War III. It's, you know, it could be anything. It can be something minor. What if you, you know, look at the economy. What if you lose your job?
Yeah.
You know, how are you going to buy groceries for your family if you don't even have a job? And it can be, you know, a drought, something small. And like you said, we've fallen away from that because, you know, we're so credit card based nowadays. Of course, I'm saying this from a point of view of an American. I mean, somebody out there is like, you have credit cards. But I mean, it's true. I mean, we're so, I mean, the world, most of the world as a whole has become so economic based that, you know, look what, how weird things get if somebody can't get to their bank ATM. You know, I mean, people come unglued. And yet, you know, if it was coming down to something bad, and, you know, I say this coming from St. George in the middle of a desert, you know, in the dead of summer when it gets like 110 degrees, you know, what would happen if we didn't have power? What would happen if we didn't have food? And, you know, there would be complete anarchy off of that alone. And it's, you know, that's, it doesn't take a lot to completely topple a system. And, you know, it doesn't have to be a nuclear war.
Well, what I think is amazing too, and I think that this, that my week out there really proved this, is that, you know, as humans, we're pretty adaptable. Of course, it takes willpower and stuff like that, but we can adapt. I would consider myself, I mean, I'm a guy who, you know, I write about video games and I sit in front of a computer for 90% of the day. And I have gotten to the point where I've gotten a little overweight, you know, which is crazy for me because I was always really skinny, but I've gotten pretty much overweight. Well, this week, I lost about 10 pounds just doing normal work, you know, outside. And I think that, and that's exciting for me because it's like, we're not supposed to be stationary. You know what I mean? We're not really supposed to be, we're not made to be just sitting around, you know, doing nothing. And like I realize the irony in that when I'm sitting here recording a podcast, you know, right about video games, but, it just makes me realize that, you know, how important that is to get out there and just do work for ourselves. You know, it's so rewarding when you can make your own stuff and you know, and use it. You know, it's just, it's incredible. I can't even describe it.
Yeah. No, that, and that's, that, I think that's honestly why, you know, for me, you know, I've always done game programming, you know, as a hobby, and people have always kind of laughed at that because, you know, I have, over the last 10 years of having learned it, you know, I haven't really made much, and they say why, and I just, I'm like, sometimes it's, you know, the fact that you're, you know, I feel like I've kind of like taken it to the next level and I'm not sitting idle just playing a game. I feel like I'm trying to use it to kind of think better and use it to kind of evolve a little bit and have like show other people my creativity and stuff like that. You know, it's interesting how much of my friends have just fallen into that. I go home, I watch TV and, you know, nothing against people who choose to do that, whatever. But it's interesting how, you know, it's no wonder our grandparents kind of look at us like, you kids are stupid. You know, because, you know, I mean, they're probably looking at us like we don't do a single bit of work in our life, and they don't know that because we have stresses they couldn't conceive of.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're right. I mean, they would get up, you know, 5 a.m. and go milk the cows just to get the milk, and it was very, very work-based, and, you know, some people still live like that. Like my wife's family up in Vernal, Utah, they're very much a cow town, and everything there, they still do that. There were a lot of cowboys, and I've always wanted to go there and do that, though. But like, it's interesting, like you said. You know, our mindset is so different, radically different from what it used to be. You know, how would we do in a survival situation?
Yeah, yeah, and that's mainly what the show is supposed to be about. You know, again, it was just a week, and you know, I'm not claiming to know everything and you know, about a survival situation or anything, but I just thought it was important to kind of relay that and kind of speak my mind on my opinion on stuff like that. You know, I think it's important. I think I wouldn't imagine that most of our listeners would be interested in that side of it. You know, I imagine most of our listeners are just like, yeah, you know, Mad Max is cool. You know, the maybe the environment or just the whole thing like that. So I realize that we're kind of catering to probably a small percentage with this episode, but I still thought it was important, and especially since I was already doing it anyway, you know, just to talk about the importance of all this stuff and the fact that there's really a lot out there to learn that could be applied to something like that. You know, it was almost embarrassing at times. The people who were there at this farm, there were a lot of people. I guess I didn't describe this before, but there were the people who owned the place. They had kids, and then there were other people just like me. who were there as volunteers. There were three others. There was a girl and two other guys. Now, they were all much younger than me. A lot of them were college students who maybe didn't know what they wanted to do, and they wanted to make a difference, so they, you know, they went out to volunteer like this. And they were young, and they kind of had the opportunity. You know, they didn't have families yet, so they had the opportunity to go do this. And some of them were there for months. I mean, there were one guy was there last year, and then he came back. But they just live like that, and you know, and they realize the importance of all this stuff. And I don't know. It's just you get back into the community aspect of it. You know, it's kind of cool how you can be in the middle of nowhere with, I guess there were about seven of us all together. And you're so close in, you know, 100 acres, but then you can live in the city and you can live 5 feet away from the guy next to you, and you don't even know his name. You know what I mean?
Nice.
And I think that's crazy. But also when you think about kind of life choices, what I was starting to say was it was almost kind of embarrassing to me at times to describe what I do for a living. You know what I mean? There were people there who, like I said, most of them were in college and everything, but it was like, well, what do you do for a living? Well, I write about video games, and they're like, oh, okay. And, you know, and I felt like it's one of those things. Actually, I saw a movie about this recently, and it really made me think about that. But it's one of those things where you're like, if it was the end of the world, what would writing about video games do for me? You know what I mean? It's like, that's why I want to learn these other skills and get these other, kind of life lessons, you know, and things like that, that I think are really important for making a difference, you know?
Yeah. Well, and that's something that, you know, we've talked about doing on the show. You know, time flies, you know, when you're having fun. And so, you know, I look back at that, and I'm like, you know, we probably this year, one of my goals, and this funny enough, here I am finding myself was having been inspired as you went on this trip, you know, thinking to myself, you know, we probably need to get, you know, have some more subjects about the real life stuff. And the thing is, you know, it's some of it, you know, we talk about in real life survival type stuff. You know, maybe some of it is kind of on the fun, far-fetched side. Maybe some of it's the real side. But if anything, I mean, you know, if anything, I think of what comes from learning about survival is a mentality that you can still make it through something during a crisis. And I think that's the first place where a lot of, you know, modern day type people will lock up. I mean, you know, I know people at work who, if their cell phone doesn't work, dear God, you know, their life just stopped. And I mean, what happens if everything stops, you know? And it's, if anything, you know, you learn from these real life lessons, the ability to kind of, you know, stop and look outside of your box that you live in. And that's one thing about the real life stuff. That and the fact that you just never know. I mean, you know, we live in an age moving very quickly, and a lot of, you know, international issues can happen very fast. You know, and I say that having, you know, we talked about the Cuban Missile Crisis, and at the same time, we almost nearly had another one. And it was interesting to kind of watch how quickly that came, like all got built up and then disappeared, you know? And, you know, we live in interesting times.
Yeah, that's certainly true. And you know, you're talking about the cell phone thing. It's funny, 'cause I would literally be out in the middle of a field with, a hoe in my hand, you know, pulling weeds out of the ground, you know, manually with my hands or with tools. And I would, and I would stop and get my cell phone out and check my email. And it was like, and it was surreal to me because it made me realize, I mean, I had to keep checking up on work, you know, I had to make sure that I was checking up on things there and everything, but it was ironic because I would sit there and I would worry about work and I would worry about, you know, things that were going on. And it's like, I'm out here, you know, just, you know, doing things on the, you know, getting my hands dirty and living off the land and things like that. And it was just one of those things where it was like, I would almost prefer, I mean, I hate to say this, I would almost prefer a situation where I didn't need that cell phone anymore. You know what I mean?
Sure. That
it would have been so much easier, I think. But another thing I wanted to talk about, I guess kind of changing gears here a little bit, but another thing I wanted to talk about was my sleeping conditions.
Oh, yeah.
Because this was actually my favorite part, and this might sound funny, but I'm is there a word for the opposite of a claustrophobic? Like someone Someone who actually loves closed spaces.
Oh, yeah, I thought you meant somebody who's afraid of open spaces. And
I don't know if there's a word for that. But
I think it's like the dwarf and from the fantasy aspect. No, I mean, I kid. No, it's funny you say that because I'm the same. I like, you know, places where it's almost like cozy.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I slept in a tent, and it was a little two-man tent. And it was pretty cool because I put it near the creek, and the creek was running, you know, all constantly running water because it was coming downhill. And so I would sleep near this creek, and it was the most amazing thing ever, you know, out in the middle of literally nowhere. It was pretty far away from the house where I was sleeping. Like, we would eat dinner in the house, and then it would be like, all right, well, good night. And then I would make my hike out to my tent in, you know, kind of near the woods and just sleep there. And it was so great just sleeping out there in, you know, in nothing. I mean, I can't remember the last time, you know, I've lived in cities for a long time. I've, you know, I lived in Phoenix and I've lived in Chicago and stuff like that and New Orleans. And I can't remember the last time I've looked up and seen stars. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's one of those things, especially growing up near Chicago, we never saw stars because it was always either cloudy or pollution.
Yes.
And the pollution is so – you just don't realize it's there. And when you go out to a place like this and you look up and you see bright stars, you know, the contrast of the white on the black background, and it's like, man, I forgot that this is what it's supposed to look like, you know. So there would be a lot of times I would just sit out there, you know, outside of the tent and just look at the stars and just listen to the – you know, nature, and it was so incredible. And it's one of those things I think a lot of people need to do. Just stop, go out, and experience nature, you know, and just be like, wow, this is what it's all about.
you're exactly right. I mean, that's you're actually hitting on what moved me here. Because I get a lot of people who go, you lived in Detroit and you moved to St. George. And then I look at them and go, have you been to St. George? Because, you know, when you see St. George, it's like when you see a lot of those pictures of the Grand Canyon with the gigantic glowing red mountains during sunset times, or like, and everything's just gorgeous. And yes, it's desert and dry, but and you know, a couple months out of the year, it's really hot. But you see this gorgeous landscape of those pictures from like Zion's Canyon and, you know, Zion's National Park. You know, I came out here and I saw that, and that I couldn't leave. I was just like, okay, this, you know, I feel that kind of connection still, and there's not a day that goes by, I kid you not, in the 10 years I've lived here, every time I go outside, because we're getting a bigger as a city, but we're still, you know, nowhere near what Detroit or Chicago would be, and so when we look up and see stars, we see everything. We see the Milky Way, and it's because it's so clear here in higher altitude. Yeah. Not a day goes by that I don't look up at those stars and go, I am so glad I can do that.
Yeah. Yeah, that is cool. That's very cool.
Yeah.
I even where I live now, I live kind of suburban, not in the city, but pretty close to it, like 5 minutes from downtown. But it's still not a big city. It's like 100 and maybe 200,000 people.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, I look up and right now and there's streetlights and there's, you know, I mean, there's not really that bad of pollution. But, you know, you just don't see the stars, you know, especially like I live in a pretty old neighborhood and there's giant trees everywhere. And there's not much sky real estate to look at. But it's just amazing to see that. And just, you know, it's one of those things that really makes you kind of stop and think. And I don't know. It's pretty cool.
This is like the philosophical episode.
I know.
Maybe that was a commune. What was in that weed you were pulling?
Dude, it was so beautiful.
Far out, man.
Actually, yeah, it was – well, like I was saying, you know, at first it was very, very hippie. And I'm not really – I mean, my parents were hippies, and I'm not really against or for, you know, that whole thing. I think that – I mean, that's a whole different issue, but there was a lot – like at this place, there was a lot of spirituality, which I wasn't really – being at their place, I'm respecting, you know, their traditions and things like that. So I didn't say like, sure. I'm not taking part in your weird hippie stuff. I didn't say anything like that. But I kind of went along with it and I observed a lot of it. But it was very, very spiritual where they were the main guy actually was big into the Lakota Indians. And everything he had in his house, it was really decked out in Lakota. And he knew some, you know, Lakota Indians and Cherokee as well. So he had a lot of really cool stuff in his house, like that was genuine. And his whole spirituality was based around what the Lakotas believed. And he taught a lot of that to us too, which I thought was really interesting. But that was another part that I thought, I'm always fascinated with Native American culture, with kind of, not so much the spirituality part of it, but the whole respect for the land, things like that. And I think that's one thing he was really teaching us about and really talking to us. And it wasn't like a camp or anything like that, but it was just, he's just telling us stories and things like that, which is really cool. But, there was a lot of that, the whole hardcore hippie stuff in there, and it was interesting to see. It wasn't, when you think of farm, you think of either, like hillbillies or, whatever, or you think of, back to the land, hippies. And back to the land movement is actually pretty big. It was big in the 70s and it's starting to get big again now. I thought it was pretty interesting that even from that aspect of it, from the kind of Native American cultural aspect was pretty cool. Even though, to be honest, there were no Native Americans there, but yeah. It was pretty cool to at least get it third hand, I guess you could say.
Yeah, well, and like I said, anything that forces you to step out of your normal realm and kind of think outside the box, even if that box is full of peyote, it's never a bad thing. I mean, it's you were, even on the spiritual level, you may not have necessarily believed in it yourself, but it was interesting to kind of watch and see and kind of like be open-minded about it. And like I said, this really is for you, like the philosophical episode. Like, I guess that is that's a big piece of survival, I think, is the knowing that how to think outside of the box and adapt and also be open-minded about things, because it's going to be the people, if there was ever a catastrophe, God forbid, it's the people who can't break their mentality of normal that they're the ones who psychologically lose their marbles. Yeah. And I think that's a big piece of that survival piece, is the mentality that comes along with it.
That's a really excellent point, actually, just keeping an open mind and being willing to adapt, because if something did happen, then you would have to adapt. You'd have to change everything. And keeping that open mind is very, very important. So, yeah, I'm glad you said that, because that's actually that's a big part of it, if not one of the biggest, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's – well, and it's something that they tout a lot here, because one of the cool things of, like, living in Utah, they're very big on the food storage aspect. And one of the things that they always talk about is – and it brings up an incredibly good point. They said most of the psychological breakdown – and this kind of goes back to being outside the box here. They said the psychological breakdown is because whenever you hear about people in food storage, they tend to do the same stuff. Get a lot of wheat. Get a lot of water, the end, and there's a certain level of psychological insanity that can come from shifting your food diet. And so out here, one of the things they do is they kind of say, first of all, they're really big on, eating your food storage, rotating it, because you want to be used to the stuff you're eating, but also because they teach you to, buy the things that you're going to eat anyway, or at least, shift your diet to a way that you're adding that into your diet. Because, how many of these people out there, have, like, you see survivalists and they've got a bunker full of like 4,000 pounds of wheat, and you're like, you're just going to eat wheat. They have no idea outside of that. They haven't gotten to that part yet, but it kind of goes back to what you're saying, thinking outside the box. And it's interesting, these little, aspects of survival, and we say that a lot of times when we're talking about it, we're half serious, half joking, but it's something that is true. You have to be thinking outside the box and be open-minded about some of this, because that's why it would be the first piece of survival, because, you think about diet alone. If you were in a bunker with 4,000 pounds of wheat, you might start freaking out after a while.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. It's funny that a lot of the more simpler things – that, you mentioned at the beginning that may or may not directly apply, as this episode's been going on, kind of made me stop and think, like, kind of step outside the normal, kind of like, we're passionate about what we talk about and we're always kind of joking around too. And this time it almost kind of feels like, kind of looking from a sideline, like, yeah, there's some things about this that are incredibly real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This has been interesting.
Yeah, well, I really hope this episode was interesting. I know, like, you know, it is a little on the serious philosophical side, but I think it was important. I don't know. I think it was something that I really wanted to just kind of express and, you know, talk about.
Well, and kudos to you for doing something like that. I mean, a lot of us talk about doing things like that. My dad's the only other one I've ever known who did, and he went down to work with a blacksmith group at an Amish Amish village, because he wanted to learn that kind of stuff. And, you know, most everybody else I've ever seen is like, yeah, I want to learn how to do that, and then we don't.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's cool. I love all that stuff, like the Amish, all that.
It's incredibly cool. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I guess that's really basically all I had to say about all that, and I hope that hope everyone enjoyed it, and we'll have to make up for it next week and have a nice, fun episode next time.
I know. This is like the philosophical episode. We'll just finish it off with like the official like final survival word, like, and don't forget to duck and cover when you see the bright light. And somebody's like, there it is. Okay, good. Whew. No, this was a really good. This was really cool, and I'm you know, kudos to you for bringing this information back, because you know, and I'm curious to see, like, you know, when you mentioned you know, coming back later on when they actually do the harvesting.
Yeah.
You know, I could see that could be yet another aspect, almost like kind of going again for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, getting something out of that, and you know, that's really cool. I kept telling people you were gold farming, like you. Well, they plant the gold and they come back later to later harvest it. Oh, that's
cool. Well, yeah, it's some people said I was playing real life Farmville.
Okay, I can't beat that one. That's funny. except yours makes sense.
Yes. And I wasn't spamming my friends with requests.
Yours didn't have ads.
Yes. Well, cool. I guess that's about it for this episode. But you're going to have the intro episode out soon, right?
Yeah, actually, by the time that you hear this, you've either heard part one already, or and hopefully part two as well. But yeah, it took a little tweaking on that one. We actually kind of made it pretty cool there. But cool. But yeah, you should have heard that. Hopefully, if not by now, pretty quick hereabout. So
awesome. I look forward to that too. And then we're not really sure what we're going to do on the next episode after that, but I'm sure it will be entertaining, right?
That's exactly right. We have some theories, but we're gonna. I was gonna make it really bad. I was like, it'll be. We have some theories, so hopefully the next time we talk, we'll know by then.
Yeah. Well, cool. So until that time, I'm Sean,
and this is Jonathan saying, "Stay alive out there, and live intense."